There are more than 500,000 villages in India, and no two are exactly alike. Some are small, others exist within cities, some have televisions and roads, others can only be reached during the dry season, down almost invisible mud tracks. Jitvapur, a small village in Bihar, just below Nepal, is a very traditional village where caste and the old order reign. There are 600 Muslims there. The total population is between 3,000 and 4,000. Nobody's quite sure. Julian Crandall Hollick first visited Jitvapur 5 years ago, and he goes back whenever possible. Over the next few months, he's promised to send us some audio letters. This morning, the rhythm of the days.
Birds and dogs are always the first to rise in Jitvapur, around 5, well before dawn. Then the women. But you never hear them as they glide silently along mud paths towards the fields and privacy. A baby cries, cold and hungry. A squadron of crows fly rudely past. Goats bleat. Someone in the cobbler's compound clears his throat of phlegm. And then all the birds start rehearsals. The pandit or priest's already gone to the temple to waken the goddess. There are 13 castes in Jitvapur, running the social gamut from the untouchables at the bottom to the upper castes on the top. Now, most of the upper castes worship the goddess Kali, and her temple's in a mango grove within shouting distance of the road. But to reach it, you have to wade across a stream full of water snakes. The temple's unimpressive, a little red brick box open on two sides, the plasters peeling off the brick. Buildings in India always seem to age prematurely in the constant humidity. Inside the temple, the inner sanctum's protected by iron grills that the pandits removed. Outside are little images of gods at the base of gnarled tree stumps. The pandit sings inside the sanctum, occasionally and vigorously ringing a handbell. Now, Kali is not the only god he worships. Outside, on a stone slab still wet with the morning's dew, he lays marigold flowers and murmurs prayers to a 3-inch painted clay image of Vishnu. His sons, 10 and 12 respectively, are in attendance, banging on gongs. They're training to follow in his footsteps. There are just 2 cars in the village. They're both owned by Brahmins or upper castes who work in the nearby town of Madhubani. Recent floods almost destroyed the old wooden bridge that links the village to Madhubani. All that's left are the crossbeams. Someone's put a couple of planks across so that bullock carts, bicycles, and those 2 cars can get across, but it's not very reassuring. When we go over it, we always try to sing or argue or anything to take our minds off that gap on the brown, churning water below. The next thing to open is Janak Mandal's tea stall. Janak Mandal must be one of the most important people in the whole village. I don't think anyone would really think the day had begun until Janak had shuffled down and opened his tea stall. By 8 o'clock, most people are up. A grand tour of nods all you'll get out of most of them before their morning meal at 9. And there's no morning commute here, no rush to get to work. And it's the same all over India. People may spend up to an hour praying, then washing, or bathing, as they insist on calling it. Finally, a late breakfast, and then off to work around 10:30. In its own way, Jitvapur is a pretty village. The single-track road leading from the market town of Madhubani cuts right through it. Around it, the various castes live each in their little self-contained compounds, cells in a honeycomb separated, or is it segregated, one from another by mango groves, rice paddies, and innumerable small ponds. Linking them, an infinite system of meandering mud paths, all ultimately leading back to the road. There's no such thing as a private bathroom here. You do everything in public. There are about a dozen hand-cranked water pumps in the village. We're in the Dalit, or untouchable, quarter now, and that's Binda Devi washing under the pump. Somehow she does it without ever taking off her blouse or sari. Indians are fanatical about washing. It doesn't matter whether you're poor or rich or how scarce water is. People are always washing, once, twice or more every day. Binda and most of the villagers still use a neem twig to brush their teeth. It's as good as a toothbrush and toothpaste, and a lot cheaper. A few words with the neighbour, a silent prayer to the sun, and Binda Davies off to her hut to face feeding the family, and then to start work looking for firewood. For many Indian women, 3, 4, even 6 hours every day is spent gathering firewood for cooking. Now, things are better in Jitfapur than in some parts of the country. You can still find wood within a mile of the village, and there are plenty of trees planted as windbreaks or to prevent animals from entering the fields. Binda Devi and her two daughters are furiously gathering up dried leaves and twigs, stuffing them into tattered jute sacks. In 1 hour, this field will be completely cleaned.
Namaste. What are you collecting?
Is it kalkarini? These are for fuel for cooking.
How many hours a day do you have to collect this?
Abhi shuru kiya? It does take 2-3 hours a day. We just started it.
Well, there some days when you can't find any wood?
Isn't lakdi nahi milti hai? Then we collect leaves, but by and large we do get wood.
Beside the pond near the Harijan quarter, Urla Davies stirring with her hands in a hole in the earth a mixture of cow dung, leaves and the chaff from winnowed wheat. Urla Davies pats the cow dung mixture flat, adds some water, stirs it and then kneads it into thin patties. Her broad handprint is pressed deep into each cow dung cake. When she's mixed them, she leaves them on the ground by the pond to dry and goes to fetch more water. Most of the men work the fields, either for themselves or for those who own the land, but most of their occupations are defined by caste. One of the more unusual is that of toddy collector. Now, toddy is juice from the palm tree, left to ferment in the sun, about 4% alcohol, not bad at all. Near the brick room we call home, there are some palm trees, but the odd thing about these palm trees is their shape. They're not straight and smooth, but serrated as though somebody's been cutting wedges out of them for fun, sort of ornamental totem pole. Now, one morning we'd taken the bedrolls out for a good airing, when a man in a loincloth suddenly shimmed up one of the palm tree trunks with a bucket in one hand and a machete in the other and started to hack away at the tree bark.
Now, I know you're Jeeva's past one. What are you doing up there?
Yes, I'm doing this, collecting the palm juice.
Is it good juice?
Yeah, it's a very good juice.
You drink it?
Yes, I drink.
What are you doing there? Why are you cutting the bark?
Because I'm cutting it because juice will come out.
I see drops of it coming. Can I drink some?
Yes, you can.
Well, what will it make me feel like?
It is sweet and it will feel nice.
What's the drink called?
Toddy.
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 Palm toddy.
Toddy.
Toddy. Toddy.
Toddy.
Toddy. Finally I get it right.
Apart from agriculture, there's a brick-making factory and a sawmill at either end of the village, but they don't really employ many people. Increasingly, you have to go into Madhubani or leave the area altogether for the big cities, Calcutta or even Bombay, and hope you can strike it rich to send money back home. Or if you're very lucky, afford to bring your wife and children to join you there. That's Mohinder Chaudhary, the dobiwala or laundry man. Every day Mohinder collects clothes from the upper castes, gives them a first wash at home, and then brings them down to the pond behind the tea stall. Here he rinses and beats the daylights out of them, and then lays them out on the grass to dry in the afternoon sun. Most men and women work till the sun goes down. Then at dusk, boys drive the bullocks home from the fields. It's twilight. Godli in Hindi, literally cow dust time. Cooking fires flicker as the blanket of night spreads itself over the countryside. The blue-grey smoke of burning cow dung fires hastens up to welcome the night. It's a peculiarly pungent smell. You never forget it. It hits the back of your throat. If you come to Jitvapur in the evening, there always seems to be a festival in some of the compounds. In my friend Divas's compound, his daughters and nieces are sitting cross-legged on the bare earth around a small fire. As they sing, they dip long reeds into the flames. These girls are singing to bring good health and good luck to their brothers. This is the festival of Samachakeva. Now, the story goes that Jamana, sister of Jamraja, the god of death, used to sing these songs to wish him long life. These young girls carry on Jamana's tradition. The idols are in little wicker baskets in front of the fire. They represent Jamraja and his sister. As the song gathers momentum, the girls start to move slowly around the fire. According to the song, Jamraja's sister wanted to find a potter, so she asked directions to the potter's house. She wanted the potter to make two clay figures of herself and her brother. In return, she offered the potter a bag of gold. When Jamraja heard about this, he scolded his sister. What a ridiculous swap. You gave him a bag of gold for two lousy clay figures. But Jamana defended the deal. Your good health is more important to me than all the gold in the world, dear brother. Every upper caste compound seems to be serenading Jamraja and his sister tonight. In Rukmini Devi's compound, they'll talk deep into the night. Rukmini is a great storyteller, so she'll probably spin them a yarn about some prince or god. And then it'll be gossip, comparing notes, probably the price of fresh vegetables and fruit. The prices have gone through the roof because of recent floods. Once the fire's out, that's it. The village will go to bed. The crickets make a frightful racket in the rice paddies. The wind's picking up. Maybe it'll rain tomorrow. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hollick in Jitvapur, India.
Our letters from Jitvapur are produced by Dean Capello. Next month, should girls go to school? You're listening to Weekend Edition. Over the Thanksgiving weekend, we presented the first in a series of reporter Julian Crandall Hollick's audio letters from Jitvapur, a small village in India. Peter Bartocci in Rochester Hills, Minnesota, wrote us to say how much he enjoyed Hollick's depiction of the daily rhythms of life in Jitvapur. Mr. Bartocci told us he lived in India and spent lots of time in rural villages, and that Hollick's report nicely captured the flavor of such places. Umesh Thakkar, a graduate student at Ohio State University, began his letter, Namaste, and continued, I would like to thank Mr. Hollick for not only sharing his experiences, but also conveying them with utmost cultural understanding. While I am in school in the United States, I miss my home, and I find that many U.S. media usually stereotype other religions, cultures, and societies. Mr. Thakkar also included a verse by Lal Dead, the 14th century mystic poetess from Kashmir, India. He who regards himself and others alike, he who regards alike both day and night, he whose mind is free from duality, he alone hath seen the God of gods. Thank you, Mr. Thakkar, and I hope you and Mr. Bertocci are listening, because we have received the second of Julian Crandall Hollick's audio letters. This one focuses on education. In much of India, girls receive the same schooling as boys. But in traditional villages like Jitvapur, girls often work in the fields or help around the house rather than go to school.
Around 10:30 most mornings, Chandai goes into the market town of Madhubani to a woman's cooperative. There she paints miniature Mithila paintings that are then sold by the cooperative in Delhi and Bombay. Now, Jitvapur's famous all over India for these Mithila paintings. They're highly colourful, using natural vegetable dyes. The women of Jitvapur used to paint them for centuries on the mud walls of their huts. Now they do them on paper and make as much money as their menfolk, sometimes much more. The subject matter is usually scenes from the great epic, the Ramayana, much of which is supposed to have taken place not far from here, over 2,000 years ago. Some of the more interesting paintings are about things that have happened in the village itself, like the day three women assaulted the local policeman, but that's another story. Devas and Chandai are waiting for us in their compound. Chandai has put on a bright green sari, one of 10 that she owns. She feels very shy when I start asking her about her childhood. Devas frequently has to prompt her.
Chandai, did you go to school?
When I was a child, sometimes for a couple of days, I did go to school.
And when did you get married?
I don't remember. I was very small.
How small was she? You should remember.
I was 9 years old, and Devas was 13 years old.
In conservative parts of India, such as Bihar, child marriage is still common. It's basically economic good sense, because the dowry you have to pay for a child is much less than for an adult. Now, the first marriage takes place before puberty. The children return to live with their respective families, often unaware of what's happened. And then 4, maybe 5 years later comes the second marriage. This one is for real. The girl now leaves home and goes to live with her husband's family. Devas and Chandai went through their second marriage when he was 16 and she was 12. And that's when Chandai came to live with Devas and his family here in Jitvapur. Now 32, Chandai has 5 children, 2 boys and 3 girls.
Now all the children are going to school?
The 2 elder boys go to school regularly, but the 3 younger girls, sometimes they go to school.
Why only sometimes?
They like to play. I go away to paint at Seva Mithila, and then the girls rather play at home than go to school.
Well, shouldn't girls go to school as well as boys?
Yes, the girls should go, but they insist they want to stay at home. So I don't even insist. I am not here. And one day, the elder girl had gone to school, and there she was beaten with a stick. And so she has formed an aversion against school, and the other girls also follow her example.
But wouldn't you like all three of your girls to go to school and get the same education as your two sons, so that maybe they could one day have good education and good jobs?
Yes, if the girls studied, it would have been nice.
Well, there's still plenty of time for them to study. Why don't you take them to school when you go to Sava Mitla and drop them off and then pick them up on the way back?
If they study in the school in the village, then when they run away from school, at least they'll be able to come back here at home. But if they go far away or to Madhubani, I wouldn't know what they are doing if they're not in school.
At what age would you consider starting to look for husbands for them?
14-15
I would start looking for their marriage when they're about 14 or 15 years old. Till then, they can help around in the house.
What if one of them didn't want to get married? What would it be your attitude then?
I would get her married off.
Even if she doesn't want to get married?
Yes, she will have to get married.
Why does she have to get married?
I have no answer for this.
Somebody told me that the girls who didn't get married, that was bad.
Yes, it is a bad thing. If the girl is educated and learned, then I guess it is all right. If she is not married, it's not a bad thing. But if she is not educated and she doesn't get married and she has to stay on in her parents' house, and then I think it is not a good thing.
But why don't you let your children, your girls, be as educated as Miss Hamani here? Then they could be independent if they wanted
to. This is obviously a bone of contention between Divas and Chandai.
The boys go because all the boys in the village do go to school. There isn't such a custom of sending girls or forcing girls to go to school.
Chandai, who will choose the husband for your daughters?
Divas will find the groom.
Now, what happens if you disagree with his choice? Will you fight and say, no, I think this is the boy or this is the girl for my son or daughter? Or will you always accept what he chooses?
I'll keep quiet.
Should a wife always obey her husband?
Yes. On the surface of it, the man makes all the decisions, finding the boy. But under the surface, I still have a say.
You're saying that women are really rather powerful, but you don't push it to the limit of making him look a fool.
Yes.
Divas, does she always obey you?
Yeah. करती है लेकिन उसका आज्ञा हम भी पालन करते हैं
Yes, she obeys me.
On the
but
surface.
Then I obey her.
A little further up the road is the primary school. Two one-room buildings with a small garden leading up to the classrooms. Vinay Kanja is the head teacher.
Is it obligatory for girls as well as boys to come to primary school?
वैसे पहले से की अपेक्षा लड़कियों की संख्या बढ़ रही है ऐसा था कि लड़की बहुत कम आती थी विद्यालय लेकिन अब इसके तरफ जो है
It was I think much true it was true of the early days when very rarely the girls were sent to school but nowadays my experience is that the girls in larger number are coming to the school
so it's not compulsory for girls to come to school
नहीं आ पाती थी लेकिन अब ऐसा हो गया है कि अब आना शुरू हो गया है हर वर्ग के हर कौम के लोग यहां आते हैं
they are expected to send irrespective of daughters or sons all the children to school but in these areas because of backwardness people lack of knowledge a lack of education on the part of the adults that this has been a problem earlier that the daughters were not sent but things have improved
aur jinka umr 5 varsh ho jata hai
ji
aur namankan ke samay december ke baad january se namankan prarambh hoti hai
we try every year to persuade people to send children but it's not been a great success yet
Divas and Chandai are trying to resolve the tension between the way they were brought up and their instincts which tell them to give the girls a chance through education. The weight of centuries of tradition versus the natural feelings of parents. It may seem easy for us on the outside, but here in Jitwapur, these are tremendous changes and they're being compressed into a single generation. For Divas and Chandai, the next few years will test them to the limits of their culture and their tradition. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hullick in Jitwapur, India.
Next month, Julian Crandall-Hullick will examine two great Indian social institutions, paan, or betel nut chewing, and chai, or Indian milk tea. It's estimated that over 800 million cups of the tea are consumed every day. Letters from Jitwapur is produced by Dean Capello. Letters to Weekend Edition Sunday should be sent to National Public Radio, Washington, D.C., Our zip code is 20036. You are also welcome to call our listener comment line. That number is area code 202-429-9889. Today is the first Sunday of February, and on the first day of the month, we broadcast our audio letters from the little village of Jitvapur in northern India. Today, in the third letter of the series, Julian Crandall Hollick introduces us to two of the great social institutions of India, Pan, or betel nut, and chai, or milk tea, without which life probably would be a little poorer. The story begins at 5 a.m. at the Kali Temple in the mango grove.
Rukmini Devi always comes to the temple before first light. She changes the flowers and sings a bhajan to the goddess Kali. One of the Brahmins is already awake. And Sita Devi has also come over to help clean the temple. By the time Rukmini is finished, Sudesh Jha, the panwala, has opened his stall and is starting to prepare pan for the day's customers. Now, pan is to Indians what chewing gum is to Americans. It's basically betel nut and a few other ingredients rolled inside a leaf, stuffed in one corner of the cheek, and chewed for hours. All that's left is bright red betel juice that Indians are forever spitting out onto the street.
Now, I see you in the morning getting up and coming to unlock this stall. What time do you normally get up?
I wake up at 4 a.m.
And what time do you open the stall?
6 a.m. I open at 6 a.m.
Sudesh Jha has already spread the raw ingredients for pan out on his counter.
This is the leaf.
This is the leaf.
Mm-hmm. What sort of leaf? What tree does that come from?
Barib hota hai. Barib.
Barib.
Lagaya jata hai. Ropa jata hai.
Usme barib. It's a creeper. It's come from a creeper.
Okay, so you've got your creeper leaf, green leaf.
Uske baad
then what you put on it?
Katha lagate hai. Aur chuna lagate hai.
Chuna lagate.
We put katha and chuna. Chuna is limestone.
Sort of white paste, looks a bit like glue, but I'm sure it isn't.
It's limestone.
Yeah.
This is.
Okay, put a bit of limestone paste. Yeah.
And then there is katha. Katha is another paste. Katha nahi lagate hain.
Let's see what that looks like. Let's read the label.
It's basically prepared from the bark of a tree in Kashmir.
Yeah, I see.
This is katha.
That's katha now. Yeah. What on earth
it's
is that?
It's been powder. This has been prepared out of the bark of the trees and then dried up and made into this kind of cubes.
Okay, so he crushes that up?
Yeah, into a powder. Or you can also put it in the water and use the lotion.
All right, so you crush that up.
Then we put the betel leaf.
That's a piece of betel nut,
That's
right?
A betel nut.
You put betel nut.
And aniseed.
Aniseed.
And some sweet spices.
Okay, roll it all up. And then pierce it together, hold it together with that piece of sort of matchstick.
Normally toothpick. You pierce it with the long. Not with the stick, but the long is very expensive, so you put a stick.
Now, why does everybody go around with a piece of pan in their mouth? Why is it so popular?
I believe the personal health remains very good by chewing pan. The throat remains clear. It's become a part of sort of culture that people enjoy eating it.
What about all those disgusting red stains, though, on the ground when people spit it out? That's not very nice.
This has become a habit with the people, which is not so nice, but is there.
Look, June. June katha. Supari. Yata khai thiri. Aap ho lagli iso.
Acha. Initially, people used to only have the betel leaf and the betel nut and betel chuna and katha. And nowadays, all kinds of things are added up, so they produce more and more, tastes, and so it's increasingly becoming popular.
Pan is becoming more and more popular?
Because all kind of other spices and jardas are added up, so the more taste can be satisfied. Earlier, it was only confined to eating betel leaf, betel nut, and just with chuna and katha. But now, additional items are there which can be used according to taste.
Now, what makes the difference between merely a good pan and a great pan?
Masala dene se जितना मसाला देते हैं इसमें उतना पान बनता है
तो वो बहुत अच्छा
सेंटदार होता है.
By adding all kinds of extra spices and extra additional or adding scents, it becomes a very good pot.
Any particular spice?
क्या क्या डाले जाते हैं?
कौन है ये 300 पत्ती है? इसको खाने से ये tasteful होता है.
It also gives you a kick.
अब किसी है?
So what's that one? Then?
This is jarda.
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 Tobacco.
Well, there's a bit of tobacco in it.
Yeah. So and the tobacco is often scented, and so people eat this, and it also gives
them
a, it gives a kick.
Four in the morning, the worst hour to have to get up. Yesterday, Suresh Jha, the panwala, who's also Divas's father, said he'd sing bhajans or religious hymns for us at 4:30 when he wakes up. We pick our way carefully along a slippery path, trying to avoid the snails. No sight of Suresh Jha. Not even a whisper of a bhajan. The village is deep in sleep. Bats fly through the compound blackness, combing our hair and shoulders. Here we are, cold, unshaven, hungry, sitting on the damp earth, waiting for a man to wake up and sing. Now somebody's awake. They've gone to raise Divas and tell him some strange shadows are here. Either lost or up to no good. Divas comes out of his hut, wrapped in a blanket, looking miserably cold and tired. I look at my watch. He said 4. Divas, 4? It's almost 5. He goes quickly to wake up his father, who is sleeping alone under the stars on his charpoy or rope bed.
रहाए कया भी मंगल तुलसी.
Suresh Jha sits bolt upright, like a soldier coming to attention, and begins singing to the greater glory of the god Krishna.
रहाए कया भी मंगल तुलसी तीनों लोक से न्यारे.
Suresh Jha suddenly comes to a halt, asks if we want to hear some more. But we're so cold and damp, we decide to get some hot chai back near the village hall. Janak Mandal opens his tea stall at 6 every morning. It's almost the first hut you come to when you enter the village. Everyone stops here, whether they're coming or going. It's the village meeting place. You stop, have a cup of chai, gossip a few minutes before pushing off. Chai's an acquired taste, of course.
I want to know how you make this tea, because it's not like how we make tea.
Pehle doodh, pehle paani dalte hain.
Acha. I put water first in the thing and put it on the fire.
दूध डालते हैं.
Then I put in warm milk.
इसके बाद चीनी देते हैं.
After that I put in some sugar.
So you put water, then you add an equal mixture of milk and then some sugar. Okay.
Yes. उसके बाद चाय डालते हैं.
Then we put the tea leaves.
Okay.
इसके बाद इसकी केतली में ढारते हैं.
अच्छा. After it boils up, then I put in the kettle.
And then you pour it.
Yeah. Then you serve it. No, then you sieve it out.
Like okay. You put it through a sieve. How long does it take you to make a batch of tea?
About 4 to 5 minutes.
But it takes you some time to get that fire going.
So aag subah jala lete hain pehle. We run the fire in the morning.
Yeah, getting a fire that hot, how long does that take you?
About half an hour in the morning.
About half an hour. How many cups of tea do you serve a day? You ever counted it?
About 150 cups a day.
And I suppose the tea shop is one of the main meeting places in the village, isn't it?
Hmm. Yes, it is one of the major meeting places.
What do you think of these tea bags which you simply put in boiling water? Good idea or bad tea?
एक वो चाय के पत्ती जो होती है बैग में होती है और गर्म पानी में उस बैग को डाल देते हैं देखा कभी
well we'll sit and wait for our cup of tea one of the best cups of tea around
and I sincerely hope that all you Lipton tea lovers sometime have the pleasure of tasting fresh chai for tea was never meant to be brewed in a bag. For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hollick in Jitfapur, Northern India.
In his next letter, Julian meets two Dalits, or untouchables, and discovers that caste discrimination still thrives in Jitfapur. Our letters from Jitfapur are produced by Dean Capello. This week, another letter from Jitfapur. Like most traditional northern Indian towns, the population of Jitfapur is made up of different castes. Upper castes own land. The untouchables, or Dalits, perform menial labor for them. For generations, the upper castes have practiced a form of apartheid against the untouchables. In many of India's cities, social barriers between castes have weakened. But as Julian Crandall-Hollick discovered when he met untouchables Binda Devi and her son Rodi Paswan, change comes to villages like Jitfapur slowly.
Binda Davies lived in Jitfapur for maybe 50 years. She's not sure. She doesn't know when she was born. All she remembers is coming to live here with her husband, Jivas Paswan, when she was 13 years old. Her husband taps palm trees for toddy or palm beer. And when he isn't doing that, he works the fields for some of the Brahmin landowners. For Jivas and Binda Devi are harijans, or untouchables, the bottom of the social pile in India's caste system. The Harijan quarter in Jitfapur lies behind the post office and is flanked on two sides by ponds. Now, Brahmins like Divas and Chandai, or Vijay the Pandit, live in mud huts, but the untouchables live in brick huts. But as usual in India, outward appearances can be very deceiving. For in the early 1970s, the late Prime Minister Indira Gandhi launched an anti-poverty campaign. And one of the main planks was the building of free housing for Harijans. So when you see brick houses in the Indian countryside, it's not a sign of wealth or high status, just the opposite. It's low-income government housing. Binda Davies back from gathering wood. She sits on the brick entranceway to her house, her eldest daughter and son with her. Her face is covered by the edge of her cotton sari. Never once does it slip. To this day, I've never seen her smile.
How many children you got, Binda Devi?
Saat tho larka hai, wo larki.
Four boys and one girl.
Did you consider boys to be equal to girls?
Barabar rehta. They're equal.
Do both your girls and your boys go to school?
Yes. The girl also studies.
And she goes to school?
Yes. Jab se shaadi hua tab se nahi. She goes to school, except when she got married, then she stopped going to school.
Oh, what? She's already married?
Chhotka log mein hali ho jata hai shaadi. Yes, she got married when she was a small girl.
Why did you marry her so young?
Harijan mein wahi na hota hamra aur kya.
Parampara hai.
In Harijans, it's a tradition that the girl gets married when she is very, very young.
Why?
Kharcha kam lagta hai.
Kharcha kam lagta hai. Umar bhaya ta kharcha mein nahi sakta hai.
It is more economical to get them married off when they are young. It's very difficult to bring them up when they get older. More expense.
Why have children at all then?
Children get born. What can I say about that?
Now, you said that daughters are more expensive than boys. Why, Binda Devi?
ladki mein zyada kharcha hua biyah daan din duragman ke liye mein kharcha bahut padta hai.
Yes, girls are more expensive because the dowry, giving, the wedding. For a girl, there are a lot more expenses.
Binda Devi, how much dowry did you give with your daughter when she got married?
700 dali.
जाते वक्त में विदाई के टाइम में दिया जाता है जिसका जो जुड़ा
700 रुपीस
तो बड़ात आया उसके बाद में ग्रामीण रहा अपना जात इनको खाने के लिए देता है तो इस सब में भी खर्चा हुआ
एंड वॉच एंड साइकिल एंड सूट बूट एंड व्हेन द बारात द ग्रूम्स पीपल केम फॉर द वेडिंग Then the whole village fed them while they stayed here.
Well, since dowry costs so much, Binda Devi, why don't you all simply decide not to pay dowry?
Dahej hum log nahi dete hain aur lete hain.
Binda Devi's clammed up, so her son Rodi takes over. But Rodi's really not telling the whole truth. For untouchables give dowry like almost everyone else. But since dowry is illegal, Rodi doesn't want to.